there's anything wrong with that. Oops. Are we on?
Hello.
Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Coming to you live through the courtesies of all these radio stations, XM, Sirius, web streaming, and you can watch a video stream if you're so inclined. How do people get to the video stream? Just go to MikeMalloy.com, and there's something to click on there, and it really works. Damn. This is, as you know, March the 31st, and somebody sent me an email that subject line says, "Where were you?" And they're referring to March 31st, 1968, 42 years ago. Wow. Is that right? 42? Yeah, 42 years ago. And this was said on that night. "I shall not seek." Now, let me try to do it. "I shall not seek. And I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president." That was Lyndon Johnson, who announced a partial halt of bombing missions over North Vietnam and proposes peace talks. He said he had ordered unilaterally, his word, a halt to air and naval bombardments of North Vietnam, except in the area north of the demilitarized zone where the continuing enemy buildup directly threatens Allied forward positions. He also stated that he was sending 13,500 more troops to Vietnam and would request further defense expenditures. And then when he closed, he shocked the nation with the announcement that all but conceded his presidency had become another wartime casualty. I'm sure the Democrats hope that doesn't happen to Obama. "I shall not seek and I will not accept." I know exactly where I was March 31st, 1968. I was in Tampa, Florida. I had a small business there. I hated it. I hated the city. I hated the business. Where were you in 68? Yeah, you were 3 months old, right? Kathy was three. Oh, Jesus. This is from CG. Subject line is "Dopey Strangey Thing." You know, like Hopi Changey Thing. "Mike, I wonder how that Dopey Strangey Thing is working for Palin's puppets. Anyone who would follow any directive from Palin is a mindless goon. Her own children don't pay attention to her, least of all listen. How many times during her life do you think Sarah told Bristol about abstinence?" Not only that, the blogs in Alaska are claiming that Sarah Palin's 15-year-old daughter, Willow, has been identified as part of a gang of teenagers that broke into and vandalized a home or homes in Wasilla. Calculations are that the home suffered between $20,000 and $30,000 in damage. Sources say it appears the teens stayed in the house for several hours, perhaps even overnight. Wonder what they were doing, huh? The troopers, state troopers, were quickly notified and the investigation began. And at first, there were very few leads. Then in January, some information came to light which identified one of the perps. This led to the revelation that all the participants were 12 local teens who had used the empty house for a party which had clearly spun badly out of control. As you have undoubtedly surmised by now, one of the teenagers identified was Willow Palin. As the investigation progressed, the children's parents were notified one by one, including the Palins. When Sarah was confronted with Willow's involvement, she at first said it was impossible since Willow was out of town. However, when the troopers interviewed the other teens, every single one of them had identified Willow as a participant and further revealed that it was she who directed the teens to the house, which she knew to be empty, for the sole purpose of having a party. According to bloggers in Alaska, the Palins used their connections to ensure that only the boys involved in the crime would be charged. Hey, how's that dopey, strangey thing coming for you, huh? Hey, Sarah! Can't contain your own, control your own kids, huh? Yes?
They were probably just trying to find the keys to the meth lab that was
That's
in the basement.
Probably what they were looking for, yeah. I got this from a guy named Steve. He's got his last name here and a phone number. He writes, please continue to cover the unemployed Americans. There are going to be 100,000 to 300,000 Floridians who will no longer collect unemployment due to their Tier 4 ending. Tier 4, I guess that's an extension. Imagine being able to provide for your family for the past 14 to 18 months due to your unemployment claims. Now imagine that your unemployment benefit has ended because there is no Tier 5 or a longer extension of your Tier 4. How far would you go to provide for your family? Robbery? Severe violence due to not being able to provide for your family, or even worse, child abuse or neglect due to the stressful inability to provide. Guess what, everyone? It's going to happen. Guess what, everyone? It's going to happen, and it already is. It will not be sudden, as if 300,000 people took to the streets wreaking havoc. The media outlets are going to be so busy covering all the tragic stories. By the time it peaks in 2 years, we will already be conditioned to it. Please understand that this will affect every single American. Imagine 10 million Americans without any unemployment assistance. Please report the severe need for an adjustment to the unemployment benefits. I fear that within a few weeks, my state of Florida is going to be a very, very violent place to be, and I fear for my family. Thank you for your time. And he signs it, Unemployed American Steve, and his last name. Well, yeah, it's happening all over. It really is. I just wonder how much longer this can go on without people working. That's the part that is scary. I think the name of this town in Massachusetts is Cochituate. Cochituate, Massachusetts. And I got this email today, and this is kind of interesting, too, so I got to share it with you. It's from Pink Pearls. Mike, when I was a child, I lived in a small town called Cochituate, Massachusetts. My family was Irish Roman Catholic, and we attended St. Zephyrin's Church. The young priest there was named Father Birmingham. Every Friday evening, the children were dropped off at the church to attend catechism classes. All the children gathered in a smaller room off of a finished basement. A volunteer parent taught the class. Just as we were being called to order, Father Birmingham would suddenly appear in full hassock and loudly declare that he was taking the boys into his office for what he called special classes and special training. He rounded up the boys and took them away. I remember watching them being herded off, thinking something didn't feel right. We were all roughly the same age, 6 years old. I never liked this man. Father Birmingham had a terse and explosive personality. Also, he was unusually thin. I now believe he abused amphetamines even back then. At least this is what he was like to deal with. There's more here. I want to share this with you because this is a very interesting story. This is the Malloy Program. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
There ain't no place in Belfast for that child to go. A cafeteria line in Chicago. Trash here I see, and I'm thinking this man wears a white glove in the night when his children should sleep. But they'll slip through their windows and they'll see how, and they'll think that white hood's all they need. 'Cause it's a house.
It is 21 past the hour. So I'm reading this email from Pink Pearls. When Pink Pearls was a child, she was 6 years old, they would go to catechism classes and the boys would be taken away. Many months later, Pink Pearls writes, there was talk in the town about some upset at the church. It went on for some time. There were rumors that Father Birmingham had been, quote, interfering with the boys, end quote. As an adult, I now recognize this as Irish code speak for molestation. My family moved from Cochituate to Sudbury, Massachusetts. This is another small, sleepy New England town, except that it was a much wealthier township. The Catholic church there was not much more than a chapel, but a very pretty stone-white church, the kind you see on Christmas cards. Much to my shock and horror, Father Birmingham had been installed there as its priest. After a while, I didn't want to attend catechism classes there or even go to church. Father Birmingham was like a screaming banshee around the church when the parents weren't around. But my parents were devout Catholics, and they insisted. I made my first Holy Communion at age 11. Between 11 and 12, there were several unpleasant incidences with Father Birmingham having meltdowns. He was a frightening figure. He was so upsetting, I risked the wrath of God and told my parents I wasn't ever going back. This precipitated one of the worst periods in my family that I remember out of my whole life. My father's mother, my grandmother, was visiting, and she had been born and raised in Ireland, where priests were evidently worshipped as gods. I never saw a negative side to her personality until that weekend, as she tried to force the issue. But I held my ground, and I never went back. I never went through the confirmation ceremony. I was never confirmed a Catholic. It took me years to shake the Catholic Church out of my head, and to this day I regard it with loathing. Little girls were picked up off the floor by their braids or their ears if the sisters felt you had committed some minute infraction. Fast forward to about 2 years ago. I'm watching television. There was a special news story breaking. I think it may have been a Barbara Walters special. The special turned out to be several men who had been interfered with by Father Birmingham as children, and they were suing him and the church. For me, it was surreal knowing all of the parts of the puzzle that these men were talking about. In the interest of accuracy, this man on the television said that Father Birmingham interfered with him at Our Lady of Fatima in Sudbury. I was prepubescent at that time, but this man was saying he was a child. When you put together Father Birmingham's interest in the six-year-olds at St. Zephyrin's and what this young man was saying about what was going on at Our Lady of Fatima, it paints a picture of someone who favored boys in the six-year-old range. The young man ended his interview talking about the lawsuit, but then he said after taking his complaint to the Catholic Church, the church made Father Birmingham a cardinal. I was stunned. It only confirmed my young thoughts that there was something very wrong with the Catholic Church altogether. As an adult, I view the Catholic Church as a predominantly gay institution / corporation. Now, before you jump through the airwaves, please be advised that if they want to have a gay church or a gay religion, I have no problem with that. My points of departure are their predatory behavior towards children, their institutionalized misogyny, and Rome's excursions into the politics of other countries, particularly America. So when you read the article by that guy who's lying his face off when he tries to pass off what Father Birmingham did as some kind of consensual adult sex, as a listener, I sit here knowing that that guy is full of prunes. Well, if it's not consensual adult sex, then, of course, it's not gay. I understand that there is a huge attraction for closeted gay people to go into something as ornate and ritualistic as the Catholic Church, sure. But these crimes against children, this has nothing to do with gayness and everything to do with a predatory attitude toward children. It has to do with pedophilia. And I just hope that people make that distinction. I don't know, Pink Pearls, if you're making that distinction or not. It's difficult for heterosexuals or non-gay people to look at someone who is molesting children and not say, or molesting boys and not say that that's gay sex. It isn't. It's pedophilia. And there's a huge difference. Consenting adults, regardless of their gender, that have sex for pleasure, and it doesn't matter if they're priests or rabbis or truck drivers, except for one thing. With the priests are taking a vow of celibacy. And having gay sex is breaking that vow, I guess, unless the vow of celibacy has to do with male-female sex. I don't even know. I frankly don't care. But I think we need to make sure that it's understood that pedophilia has nothing to do with homosexuality. All right, we have a break. We will be back. See if I can make the cough stop again. We got any music? Oh, there it is. All right, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Sting, try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Maureen Dowd, who is Catholic, once again today in New York Times, she's calling for an inquisition of the Pope. This is interesting. Edmund sent this to me. It's a little hard to read because I think he's a little pissed off. But he says the Papearch, do you mean Papearch or Patriarch of Rome, took the name of an earlier Pope Benedict, the one who began the Inquisition. The instrument of torture and auto-da-fé, or burning at the stake, and the intimidation, threat of the rack, and house arrest for life of Galileo for his heresy of saying that the earth goes around the sun. Before being the present uber-Orthodox Pope, Benedict was the head of the propagation of the faith, which is the residual today of the Inquisition, begun by Benedict V, the terrorist of Rome, Seville, and Toledo, where its horrors are disturbingly described by Edgar Allan Poe in The Pit and the Pendulum. When he was Archbishop of Munich, he countenanced civil crime and churchist sin, which proved his incompetency by merely transferring to other parishes the uncovered pedophile priestlings and pederast bishoprics. Such official pervanimity makes Ratzinger a rat bastard conservative, conserving pathological traditionalist Catholic false fear pusillanimous prejudice, hate, and injustice against women, gays, pagans, heretics, atheists, anti-religionists, and free thinkers. Then some footnotes. I don't know where these came from, but they're interesting. Benedict the Ninth, who was Pope a couple of times. He was elected Pope at age 11. This goes back to the year 1032 until 1047. He was elected Pope at age 11. He was twice driven from his position due to his participation in plunder, immorality, oppression, and murder. Church historians described him as, quote, that wretch from the beginning of his pontificate to the end of his life. He, quote, feasted on immorality, end quote, and, quote, a demon from hell in the disguise of a priest has occupied the chair of Peter, end quote. Woo, that's Benedict the Ninth. Benedict the Fifth, in the year 964, described by a church historian as, quote, the most iniquitous of all the monsters of ungodliness, end quote. Then there was Pope Sixtus the Fourth, who was Pope from 1471 to 1484. This is the Pope who built the Sistine Chapel, in which all popes are now elected. Sixtus the Fourth had several illegitimate sons, licensed the brothels of Rome, and received a large amount of revenue for the papacy from these houses of iniquity, introduced the novel idea of selling indulgences for the dead to raise more revenue, and sanctioned the Inquisition in Castile, Spain, by issuing a bull in 1478. And in one city, Andalusia, one city of Andalusia, in 1 year, 2,000 so-called heretics were burned at the stake. Alexander VI, from 1492 to 1503. He was a murderer by age 12. He had 10 known illegitimate children. He was infamous for his drunken and immoral parties. He was known to have cardinals who had purchased their positions to be poisoned so that he could sell their positions again and increase his turnover. He spent a fortune in bribes to secure his own election as pope, and he caused the reformer Savonarola to be burned at the stake. And then in conclusion, the Roman papacy has been characterized by extreme cruelty in its persecution of those it deemed as heretics. In particular, the Waldensians, the Lollards, the Albigensians, the Provençal troubadours were slaughtered by the forces of Rome. Yeah, I'm sure there's all sorts of history. I can remember one time just in a very cursory way checking out some of the history of the popes, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable stuff. Just madness. Madness. Let's do a report here from Prairie 2, our economics affairs correspondent. He writes, Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, Knight takes oil well, checkmate in 7 months. Prairie 2 writes, President Obama has set up the winning gamut for the fall elections by taking the oil away from the Drill Baby Drill Express. Instead of running over the Democrats in the fall, the bearings will seize on the GOP Hummer and it will sit smoking on the dead-end road of history. Before liberals feel all betrayed to big oil, you need to consider that the oil companies have only drilled on a fraction of the leases that they got under Clinton. Most of these places aren't likely to be exploited for decades, if ever. With a Democratic majority, there is at least the possibility of a rational energy and trade policy. To highlight that point, British Petroleum was one of the biggest producers of solar electric panels remaining in the U.S. I say was, since they just announced they're packing up and moving to China. Obama continues to rack up an increasingly impressive record with breakthrough negotiations with the Russians to control nukes without giving up that conservative pacifier of ABMs. He can point to a much increased campaign against Al-Qaeda, something that Bush ignored despite all the color-coded warnings. Basically, Obama is a good, quote-unquote, Republican. At least he is a compassionate conservative. The Republicans have been screaming for a year that the world would end if Obamacare were passed. Now that it is law, and what is happening is the swing voters are finding the reality to be completely different. Now their children can't be dropped from insurance for any reason, and that makes a campaign slogan that's hard to talk around. We want your kids to suffer and die. Vote Republican. That's a good point, Prairie 2. The millennium generation that was instrumental in getting Obama elected are getting a break on their student loans with the payments reduced and a 20-year cap on payments. This also gives a break to the Gen Xers who don't want their kids living in the basement. The Republicans, by contrast, have been all over the news shouting, hell no, to everything. Hell no to health insurance for the voters' kids. Hell no to extending their unemployment. Hell no to fixing their mortgage. Republicans want more tax cuts for the rich. And blaming Obama for the Wall Street bailout isn't resonating anymore with the public. Obama's poll numbers are better than most presidents that have been reelected, even with a good portion of the country hating him for the color of his skin. Americans like an underdog. If he stands up for what's right and shows he can be a winner against the odds, that's hope we can believe in. Prairie 2. There you go. And Tom responds to that. He didn't know what Prairie 2 wrote, but Tom and Joshua T. writes, Mike, after hearing Obama's new pledge to drill, baby, drill, I decided to escape into a Netflix oldie and watched Pasolini's Oedipus Rex. You know the story, so did I. But today it all made modern sense. American greed has killed its father, or the fathers of the Constitution, had sex with its mother by ravaging the land, air, sea, and institutions, and now stumbles around stripped naked of rights and as a self-blinded stranger in a land not its own, but owned by foreign nationals and transnational corporations. The more things change, the more they stay the same. This unconscious drive into political, cultural, and environmental devastation is just that, the devastation of unconsciousness. This mythic recurrence is today felt and seen as a cognitive battle we've all been thrust into, like it or not. So since all these ignorant, abusive, self-centered bastards have stolen our memes, such as freedom, peace, liberty, why not hijack theirs and shove it right back in their faces? For example, heaven. Let's start a nationwide ad campaign that says, hey, you effing freaks, you want heaven? What's up there, jackass? You got universal health care? Or what's up there, jackass? You got universal health care? You got full rights of women and children? You got a full stomach? You got peace? You got high-quality education up there? You freaking a-holes? Well, get busy with it right here and now, because that's the price of getting any of it there and then. It's a pretty long slogan, Tom. Then let's sit back and watch how religious they really are as they choke to death on their own fetid rhetoric. The only stumbling block I can see is that most of those God freaks all think that when they get to heaven, they've got a free pass to butcher, rape, maim, and rob without consequence, just like they do here. But making these creeps the enemy of their own God seems like a nice way to give them all the finger and make them eat their crap at the same time. What else are we going to do other than perish in a humorless stew of inaction? Woo, Tom. Yeah, that's true. You know, everything is socialistic in heaven, right? Isn't that right? Nobody nobody works. You just play your harp and walk the streets of gold and food is presented. You don't work for it, do you? I mean, that's not what I've heard. You don't need health care because you don't get sick. Another socialist implication there. Everybody's equal, says so in the Bible. That's socialist. Oh, my God. I had no idea that heaven was a communist heaven. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Don't need to be teaching no biology. You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. The other night, was it last night, I read the piece from Naomi Wolf that to me was really disturbing. I think something has happened to her mind. But I got this today from Julie in Seattle, and she writes, happened onto the show on Wednesday night and heard you read from the interview with Ms. Wolf and the great discussion with your people that followed. Sometimes when you go off on Obama and the Democrats and the rotten, dirty money and the stinking system and the gun rack on your truck, though I can't blame you down there in Crackerdom, sometimes I want to call and yell, consider the alternative, Mike. So I was very glad to hear tonight, this would be last night, that you're not in that weird camp that sees us all walking arm in arm into democratic utopia with bitterly disappointed Republicans now calling themselves Tea Partiers. And I wanted to say so. I read a bit of Naomi Wolf's book when looming fascism themes were obviously acutely resonant, when George W. Bush was being puppeted by out-fascists like Cheney and Rove, and found it suitably alarming. But it read like a dumbed-down master's thesis, which comports with the left elitist talk in the interview. Hearing tonight that she's drinking the tea has confirmed for me that Naomi's the worst sort of armchair idealist, one heedless of the real-world consequences. This is a woman in love with her own beautiful ideas and the tingly romance of imagining revolution in places distant in times and lands far away. I'm familiar with her genre because I was once a bright undergraduate history major obsessed with the Holocaust, reading Lenin and swooning over Warren Beatty in Reds. But when you read this question, this answer from the interview, I had a moment of singular clarity. Question: how do you feel about your books bolstering a fight for policies you don't agree with? Answer from Naomi: if people are taking my book seriously and organizing, getting into office, caring about the Constitution, and not waiting for someone else to lead them, I think God bless them. All of us should be doing that. The left should be doing that. There's always the risk in advocating for democracy that the first people to wake up might not be your team. But that is a risk worth taking. I would rather have citizens I don't agree with organized and active than an oligarchy of people that I agree with. End quote. Yikes, Julie writes, not me. I'd much rather have a friendly oligarchy that agrees with me than whatever form of rule might emerge from the raging, carnivorous, incoherent right wing in this country. My life has improved 1,000% since the changing of the guard from Bush to far more intelligent, well-intended, and relatively sane, reasonable people Obama has installed. I haven't needed a Xanax since Inauguration Day. My political creed these days is simple. No more Republican presidents in this lifetime. The teabaggers are singing Naomi's song and buying her book. Who knew? But it has a totally different meaning for this mob, whose leaders she's broken bread with. What these literalists refer to as the Constitution is an obelisk inscribed with all sorts of horrors of their own invention, not least of which is their dreadful religion. Once they took over, someone would denounce Naomi for the feminist book she's written, and she'd burn as a witch. Your allusion to Bible literalists was brilliant, same as this Naomi must embrace the notion all humans are basically good, as in Rousseau's Natural Man, and in the American variations is the same thing by Henry David Thoreau. After 50 years on this planet, I beg to differ. These teabagger, Republican, right-wing foxtards are one big clump of mean, crazy, and reactionary. They're as dangerous as Weimar Germans, and I'm more interested in seeing them watched by the authorities than I am in the laughable notion of communicating with them. I know it's awful, but the militia arrest this week amused me because these goons all lined up to salute the flag when George Bush and his gang set up this beautiful machine of surveillance for the government. And now it's being used on them. Ha. Ha. As for Naomi Wolf, off imagining herself Trotsky to Ron Paul's Lenin, as another Lenin and McCartney wrote, Quote, but if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you'll have to wait. Julie in Seattle. It was very interesting to me. We got an inordinate number of emails regarding that piece by Naomi Wolf. And the fact that she apparently has become a victim of Stockholm Syndrome or something. And I, you know, I completely agree. The only reason I wanted to get that on the air was to show, I guess, to anyone who wanted to see it, the seductiveness, not of the teabagger movement, but, you know, when somebody is spouting, and I don't mean that in a negative way, as Naomi Wolf has been spouting about the drift in this country towards fascism. And she uses certain phrases, certain characteristics of history and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, these ghouls show up, the teabaggers, with their corrupted language, the language that Glenn Beck, of course, is spoon-feeding them. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. I don't think Beck does either. But they're being spoon-fed the language of resistance that belongs to the progressives. It belongs to the socialists. It belongs to people who resist tyranny. And these people are all about tyranny, and they're using the language of resistance when they're not interested in resisting. What they're interested in doing is taking a number and putting on their tunic and marching forward to get their ladle of soup, I guess. We'll be back after the break. Just stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Get 1.9% APR financing on all 2010 Mini Cooper models. For details, visit miniusa.com/info. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. All of a sudden, I'm getting a little rush of emails here about pedophilia versus gay and so on and so forth. Pedophilia is by definition of the Greek roots of the word. It is not homosexual. It is pedophilia. Dave writes, I love your show. I've been listening for a long time now. I got to take issue with you over the gay versus pedophile thing. I was molested as a child, albeit not by a priest, but by an older sibling, also a male. As it turns out, he's not gay. But I also attended a Jesuit college, and I can tell you that at least half of my professors were as gay as the day is long. I've also attended a Catholic church in my hometown. I can tell you this priest is definitely playing for the other team. I gotta ask, why would the priest your listener wrote about, who had been molesting young children in his parish, only choose boys if he wasn't gay? Why the gender exclusivity? As sick as this sounds, it seems to me he would have gone for little girls if he were straight, right? I'm no gay basher. Oddly enough, despite my background, I have several gay friends who I value very highly, and I even hit a gay bar with them from time to time for something different. Okay. But this notion that no pedophiles are gay is just silly. Gays come from all social strata, ethnic backgrounds, and even genders. Why wouldn't there be some who also happen to be tuned on... why wouldn't there be some who also happen to be turned on by little boys or girls? Just saying. Keep up the good work. Well, I don't think there's... about 99%, if not 100% of pedophiles are males. Why they go for little boys as opposed to little girls is not for me to say. Pedophilia, though, is described as a psychosexual disorder in which an adult's arousal and sexual gratification occur primarily through sexual contact with prepubescent children. The typical pedophile is unable to find satisfaction in an adult sexual relationship and may have low self-esteem, seeing sexual activity with a child as less threatening than that with an adult. Most pedophiles are men. The condition is extremely rare in women. Maybe if you're gay and listening to the program, maybe you can come up with a better answer to Dave. I've always made the distinction that pedophilia is described as a psychosexual disorder. Homosexuality is not. Now, I realize up until about, the 70s, it was listed in the DMS-3, homosexuality, as some sort of a mental disorder. But I think that reflected more the narrow-mindedness of the people writing the DSM-3, or was it 2, than the truth of human sexuality. I think it was Havelock Ellis who first described pedophilia as, you know, being a exclusive sexual attraction to children. But why young boys are picked, prepubescent boys, little kids, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, as opposed to little girls, I have no idea why that is. Do you? You were a psych major. What, do you have any idea?
I just think it's probably partially availability. I mean, the little girls are busy having their pigtails yanked on by the nuns and their knuckles wrapped. The little boys are all at the schools with the priests and they're the altar boys. And I think it's just more set and setting. Although, I think that there are some men whose partial attraction to the priesthood is set availability of young white men or black boys or, you know. Whatever.
Well,
young boys.
I'm not denying that there are gay priests, just like there are gay journalists.
Pedophiles, though. I'm not even, you know, I'm just saying.
Well, I just want you know, it's very important to me. Somebody else could take a different point of view. But it's very important to me to make the distinction. Pedophilia is a psychosexual disorder. Homosexuality is not. Someone who is male, who is attracted to and seduces or not seduces, Jesus, rapes or sexually molests a little boy, a male priest or whomever who rapes or sexually molests a little boy, I don't think he is demonstrating homosexuality at all. I think he's demonstrating pedophilia. So, I just make the distinction clearly. To me, there's a clear, bright line between pedophilia and homosexuality, no matter the gender of the victim, because in a main sense, it's not about the perpetrator; it's about the child who is being violated. So, if we've got to find a definition for these bastards, okay, pedophilia works for me, not homosexuality, huh?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, some pedophiles like blondes, some like brunettes, some like, you know, tall kids, skinny kids, fat kids, some prefer boys to girls.
Right. And the other thing, too, and I think you were right, the other thing, too, in its availability in so many schools, in Catholic schools, are single gender classes, single gender schools. You know, my old man, I told you, he went to Jesuit high school in Massachusetts, so that he could become a priest of all things. So the and there were no girls around. It was all males. So yeah, the church can be, since it is just like the military. You know, the military attracts an awful lot of people, men who are gay, and women now too. But because of the, because of the hierarchical structure, the uniforms, the everything that goes into being a priest or being somebody in the military. And this is not a conclusion that I've drawn on my own. This is a conclusion I've come to from reading and from listening to people I know who happen to be gay and who've taken the time to explain it. And if I have it wrong, okay. But to me, pedophilia and homosexuality are two entirely different things, entirely. The only reason we're talking about all this, of course, is because the fact that the Catholic Church is becoming unraveled. I mean, it is just spinning towards the drain. I hope it goes. I hope it gets sucked down. Irish Dave writes, Mike, it figures that heaven would be like liberal colleges. It's all kind of pass or fail. Nobody could have predicted the Spanish Inquisition. Waterboarding, after all, is just baptism evolved. On the other hand, the popes gave us the word nepotism from the practice of dead popes passing on their property to their nephews, nepo, since they couldn't legitimately have any heirs. And also, somebody pointed out to me that the definition of celibacy means no marriage. It doesn't mean no sex, whereas chastity, nuns take a vow of chastity, no sex. Priests take a vow of celibacy. The first, if you go to dictionary.com, the first definition of celibacy is no sex, but the second and third definitions are no marriage. It meant to stay unmarried. So, you know, there's a nice little something that people can rip apart: celibacy as opposed to chastity. I don't know. The only reason we're talking about all this is because the Catholic Church has once again shown itself, as it has throughout history, to be this this hideous organization that is anti-intellectual, anti-science, anti-female, anti-life, anti-everything. It's all about death and cannibalism and psychosis. Oh, I'm sorry. I know you're a Catholic. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Monkey-free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
So, maybe saw it on the TV today. Barack Obama is proposing to open vast expanses of water along the Atlantic coastline to oil exploration. Also, the eastern Gulf of Mexico and the north coast of Alaska, oil and natural gas. And a lot of this is for the first time. According to the Times, I think it's the Times, may not be, who cares, the proposal is a compromise that will please oil companies and domestic drilling advocates, but anger some residents of affected states and many environmental organizations. This ends a long-standing moratorium on oil exploration along the East Coast from the northern tip of Delaware to the central coast of Florida, covering 167 million acres of ocean. Under the plan, the coastline from New Jersey northward would remain closed to all oil and gas activity. So would the Pacific coast from Mexico to the Canadian border. So, you know, a lot of liberals got their back up over this one, right? September 2008, during the campaign, Obama said part of America's energy strategy should include increasing domestic production. He said, quote, "That means that we, as one of the biggest consumers of oil, have to have an energy strategy not just to deal with Russia, but to deal with many of the rogue states we've talked about, Iran, Venezuela. And that means, yes, increasing domestic production and offshore drilling. But we only have 3% of the world's oil supplies, and we use 25% of the world's oil, so we can't simply drill our way out of problems." That was from the first presidential debate, September 26, 2008. And this from the second presidential debate, October 7th, 2008. Obama said, "I believe in the need for increased oil production. We're going to have to explore new ways to get more oil, and that includes offshore drilling. And let's take the example of energy, which we already spoke about. There's going to be the need for each and every one of us to start thinking about how we use energy. I believe in the need for increased oil production. We're going to have to explore new ways to get more oil, and that includes offshore drilling. It includes telling the oil companies that either you use the acres you have, for you have leased, or you lose them. We're going to have to develop clean coal technology." Oh, my God. Clean coal technology. See, I mean, come on. Nobody should pretend here. The man said this. And clean coal technology and safe ways to store nuclear energy. Now, I'm not sure. That sounds like something George Bush would say. Safe ways to store nuclear energy. I think he meant nuclear waste. But there is no safe way to store nuclear waste. It doesn't exist. And there is no such thing as clean coal technology. Well, he did say develop it. But how do you do that? Science doesn't have a clue at this point. Now I know somebody's going to send me an email. Oh, yes, they do. Anyway, he goes on. So one can't say, oh, another betrayal by Barack Obama. No, it isn't. And as a point of fact, I have to say, this doesn't come under the heading of, tooting my own horn, but we talked about this before he was elected. We took these speeches, the answers to some of his speeches, or the debates apart. We talked about his record in Illinois and in the U.S. Senate. And I can remember saying over and over again on the program, don't kid yourself into believing Barack Obama and is a liberal. He may be a center-right progressive, but he's not a liberal. He's not center-left. He's not left. And I also pointed out that the people who thought that because he was African-American, he was going to be more liberal, that displays a kind of racism the most white people just don't get. Well, I'm not a racist. I'm saying he'd be more liberal because he's African-American. No, that is racist. I mean, that is racist to say that. It is. When, in fact, black folks that I know have told me over and over again that the black community, especially the church-centered black community, is very conservative. It's very conservative. People say, yeah, but what about all the riots back in the city? Jesus, God. I mean, the riots were about wanting jobs or education or stop being called the N-word or don't assassinate any more of our leaders, you know. Oh, well, I'm trying to do too much tonight. We want to come back and do a moment with Bob. talking about pedophilia and racism and the collapse of the church. Whatever. Stay with us. Oh, Obama, nuclear power, and offshore drilling. These are not surprises. They shouldn't be, anyway.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. I think it's time for another moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends in the nuclear industry. Another moment with Bob. This one is titled, Of Monsters and Saints. Hey, Mike, as we all know by now, Father Lawrence Murphy was accused of molesting at least 200 boys at a Wisconsin school for the deaf. This monster preyed upon children for 24 years. His horrendous crimes were covered up by school personnel and his immediate church superiors, all the way up to Cardinal Joseph Alois Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI. For some reason, the Catholic Church's protocols and manners of child rape by priests do not include turning the predator over to the police. They are handled instead by a department at the Vatican called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. In 1996, Milwaukee's Archbishop, Rembert Weakland, wrote to Cardinal Ratzinger, who at the time was the prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, alerting Cardinal Ratzinger that Murphy had been accused of molesting children in the confession booth. It took the Vatican office 8 months to respond to his letter. In January 1998, Murphy wrote to Cardinal Ratzinger. Murphy, the accused, wrote to Cardinal Ratzinger, quote, I'm 72 years old, Your Eminence, and I am in poor health. I've just recently suffered another stroke, which has left me in a weakened state. I have followed all the directives of both Archbishop Cousins and now Archbishop Weakland. I have repented of any of my past transgressions and have been living peacefully in northern Wisconsin for 24 years. I simply want to live out the time that I have left in the dignity of my priesthood. I ask your kind assistance in this matter. End quote. Murphy's letter, Father Murphy's letter to Cardinal Ratzinger was not a plea to avoid being turned over to the police. He just didn't want to be kicked out of the priesthood. When Murphy died on August 21, 1998, Milwaukee Archbishop Weakland wrote to the Vatican to suggest closing the case. Murphy was never indicted, tried, or convicted of any crime, nor were any of his enablers. Under Wisconsin law, a person accused and convicted of having sexual contact or sexual intercourse with a person who has not yet attained the age of 13 is guilty of first-degree sexual assault of a minor child, a Class B felony. For a Class B felony, the penalty is imprisonment up to 60 years. However, for a repeat offender, the term of imprisonment may increase up to 2 years with prior misdemeanor convictions and up to 6 years with a prior felony conviction. A person accused and convicted of having sexual contact or sexual intercourse with a person who has attained the age of 13, but not the age of 16, is guilty of second-degree sexual assault of a minor child, a Class C felony. For a Class C felony, the penalty is a fine of up to $100,000 or imprisonment of up to 40 years or both. However, for a repeat offender, the term of imprisonment may increase up to 2 years with prior misdemeanor convictions and up to 6 years with a prior felony conviction. If a person who's responsible for the welfare of a minor child who is under the age of 16 years knows that another person intends to have, is having, or has had sexual intercourse or sexual contact with the minor child and fails to act to prevent the intercourse or sexual contact from occurring or being repeated, then the caregiver, that person, may be charged with failure to act to prevent a sexual assault upon a child. Failure to prevent sexual assault on a child is a Class F felony. For a Class F felony, the penalty is a fine of up to $25,000 or imprisonment of up to 12 and a half years or both. The laws and the penalties for breaking the law are clear. Father Murphy, if tried and convicted, would have died in prison. Everyone who knew of his crime and did nothing would have served serious time. But the Catholic Church is above the law when it comes to sex crimes. Their priests can brutalize children with impunity for decades. But the Church does not offer sanctuary to the priests who oppose the actions of our government when it runs amok and brutalizes whole nations. Two Catholic priests, the Berrigan brothers, Daniel and Philip, were for a time on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitive list for committing acts of vandalism, including destroying government property. Along with Trappist monk Thomas Merton, they founded an interfaith coalition against the Vietnam War and wrote letters to major newspapers arguing for an end to the war. In 1967, Philip Berrigan was arrested for nonviolent protest and sentenced to 6 years in prison. Daniel and Philip, with seven other Catholic protesters, destroyed 378 draft files with homemade napalm in the parking lot of the Catonsville, Maryland draft board on May 17, 1968. The Catonsville Nine, as they came to be known, released this statement, quote, "We confront the Roman Catholic Church, other Christian bodies, and the synagogues of America with their silence and cowardice in the face of our country's crimes. We are convinced that the religious bureaucracy in this country is racist, is an accomplice in this war, and is hostile to the poor," end quote. The Berrigans were arrested and sentenced to 3 years. Both brothers went into hiding, but were eventually apprehended by the FBI and sent to prison. Thus endeth today's lesson regarding the hypocrisy of the Catholic Church. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. The worst thing that happened to me was I was taught religious gibberish. I stopped being a practicing Catholic when I was 13. I continued to go through the motions until I left home 3 years later. From then on, all Sundays were mine. In a sense, I don't understand the huge uproar about what should happen to the church regarding the unfolding worldwide sex scandals. Well, it should be easy. Impanel grand juries, subpoena, and if necessary, extradite all involved parties so they can give testimony. If there's enough evidence for indictments, prosecute. If convicted, the sentences handed down will be served. Church property should be seized, sold, and reparations made to the thousands upon thousands of victims. If done properly, by the end of the process, Catholic Church Inc. should no longer exist. But the Vatican has virtually an unlimited amount of money to spend on delaying accountability. The poor will continue to starve. The physical and psychological wounds inflicted by the pedophiles will go untreated, and the guilty shall be sheltered by the church. If nothing else, Father Lawrence Murphy's body should be dug up, the priestly collar ripped from his rotted throat, and the carcass boxed up and sent to the Pope with this message: "Enclosed, you will find one of your men of God. You didn't want to deal with him when he was alive, so here are his bones. May his ghost and the anguished cries of the hundreds of children he preyed upon hound you to the grave. Regards, Bob." Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends in the Vatican. That's a good one. That's a good one. Dig up his bones, put them in a box, and send them. Oh, man. I have to pause after that. I you know, I realize that there are a lot of Catholics, active Catholics and lapsed Catholics, and also, I mean, the Catholics seem to have this whole, almost this color-coded rainbow of where they stand. They're cafeteria Catholics and lapsed Catholics and backslid Catholics and recommitted Catholics. And, you know, the cafeteria Catholics are the ones that pick and choose what they want from this vast menu of what the church says, don't! I have a hard time with religion to begin with, but Catholicism, oh man. So, you know, I understand that a lot of people who listen to this program who are Catholic. I mean, consider this, 6 of the 9 Supreme Court justices are Catholic. I think one is Jewish, and the other two, I guess, are Protestant. Is that the breakdown? 6 of the Supreme Court justices are Roman Catholic. I don't know. Is that good? Is that good? Should it be that way? There was a time in the history of this country where Catholicism was seen as a scourge, something that needed to be eradicated from the body politic here. It needed to be chased out of the country. They were papists. They were awful people. I can remember my fundamentalist Baptist grandmother telling me when, you know, a lot of things she said went in one ear and out the other, but telling me when I was a kid that Catholics were all going to go to hell because they prayed to graven images. Of course, I used to think to myself, well, Grandma, so do Baptists. But I didn't say that. I would have gotten a switching. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Steps you want if you have cleared them with the pontiff. Everybody say his own Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican right. Get in line in that processional, step into that small confessional. They're the guy who's got religion. I'll tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer. Drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8. Time to transubstantiate. So get down upon your knees. Fiddle with your rosaries. Bow your head with great respect and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make a cross on your abdomen. When in Rome, do like a Roman. Ave Maria, gee, it's good to see you. Getting ecstatic and sort of dramatic and doing the Vatican right.
That was in response to a request. Tom Lehrer's Vatican Rag. That's a goodie. I like that. I like that. Oh, my God. This will be the last email about this tonight. This is from Bruce in California. Pedophilia versus homosexuality. Mike, this debate or argument about whether priests who molest little boys are gay or not is really a smokescreen. Let's consider a man, priest or not, who molests little girls. Does anyone accuse him or blame him? Does anyone accuse him of or blame his heterosexuality for the act? Certainly not. To blame homosexuality for the pedophilia of a priest who favors boys is neither logical nor rational. While his preference for boys might well be due to his homosexual leanings, it's as immaterial as the other molester's heterosexual leanings, causing him to target little girls. It's inappropriate and illegal. That's the only issue. Anyone who tries to turn it into a gay issue is trying to protect the criminal rapist by blaming something other than the individual himself. Bruce in California. That's the argument I think I was trying to make, and Bruce did it quite well. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate it. That is absolutely the bottom line on that. It is. So thanks. We're going to do phone calls when we come back. After the break at the top of the hour, the phone number here is 877-996-2556. This is from Sam in Los Angeles. I can't tell the real difference between, he's talking about these, the teabaggers. I can't tell the real difference between these morons and the libertarians. I don't care about the differences because they're all the same to me. Their siren call is individual freedom, smaller government. This is bat crazy code for I deserve anything my dumb white ass wants. To hell with the brown people. Truly, with the smaller government of their dreams, no public services, including highways, education, military, fire and police, and most of all, no Social Security, no Medicare, no VA, no disability, etc., etc. Now, all the baggers I've seen are on government programs, and they probably stood to make a little scratch on the side from the coffers of people like Dick Armey and his brown shirt operation, freedomworks.com. They probably aren't even conscious of all this since they have had their brains sucked out with a straw. They voted for the Bush creeps and Ronnie Reagans and are simply GD Republicans in wolf's clothing. The only thing I agree with that Naomi Wolf mentioned in her interview is the fact that Obama is no better than Bush, allowing all Bush's shenanigans to continue under Obama's administration. He should have come in with a vengeance, cleaning house. I don't think these bastards would have had the chance to congeal like rotten milk in the sun and gain the big mouth the way they did. Our banks would have been nationalized, and we would now have single-payer health care, and we wouldn't be facing another depression. Instead, the banksters are at it more than ever, and we've got a health insurance bill written by a WellPoint, Inc. sociopath murderer who left her lair to use Max Baucus. Whoa, you people are in great form tonight. The writing is absolutely over the top, which is what I really appreciate. Really appreciate. I got a press release from Coral Ridge Ministries. It asks the question, is Obama a socialist? New book, and 40% of Americans think so. A controversial Harris poll showing that 40% of Americans think President Obama is a socialist, along with Cuban dictator Fidel Castro's surprise endorsement of the president's health care legislation, have renewed questions about the president's politics. While these recent signals may or may not indicate the president's true ideology, more telling, according to a new book from Coral Ridge Ministries, are the actions and associations of the president stretching all the way back to his teen years in Hawaii. And then it goes on and talks about the usual nonsense. Coral Ridge Ministries is another one of these filthy, disgusting. They're almost as bad as Scientology. I'll tell you, the Catholic Church, Scientology, and these fundamentalist Protestant organizations like Coral Ridge Ministries, Inc., all ought to be, I wish I had the button to just push it and make these organizations just totally disagree or disappear. Sick bastards. How could somebody be a Catholic, a Scientologist, or a fundamentalist Christian of any stripe? How could you do, or a fundamentalist Muslim for that matter? How could you do that? How can people be that willing to give up their minds to a fascist organization like Scientology? I can hear you little bastards writing the emails to me now, you crazy Scientologists. I hear them coming. You talk about Pavlovian responses. Every time I say something about these dumbass Scientologists, I get all these emails. When I talk about the fundamentalist Christians or the Catholic crazy people, I'm pretty much just ignored because I think everyone knows that. But the Scientologists are literally clinically mad. They're all insane. But if I had the button to push to make all that crap disappear, would I do it? In a heartbeat. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. To the Malloy Show. We have Kay's report card coming up at the bottom of the hour. All right, these came in during the break, so just a couple here, and then to your phone calls. Kathy in Maine writes under the subject line, Recovering Catholics. She writes, Mike, I spent 12 years in Catholic school, and in grades 1 through 8, I sang in the choir every morning at Mass in the church attached to our school. At times, I had to take things to the priests in the rectory, and I saw ashtrays and liquor bottles on the bureaus of the private rooms. The older boys often went to the rectory for reasons unknown to me, but I always wondered what was going on. The altar boys, some of whom were my friends, never said a word about why they went there. It gives me chills and makes me feel very sickened when I think about that time. I'm a recovering Catholic now. Actually, my birthday is this Friday, Good Friday. But I'm going to have a shot or several of tequila and pray that those old friends do not have to deal with the demons of the past. Kathy in Maine. Oh, no, is Molly awake? Oh. We have to interrupt the program. What's the matter? What happened? Huh? What happened? She have a bad dream? Okay, folks, if you hear a crying child, it's not because we're Catholic priests. It's because Molly had a bad dream and came down the steps. Does Hannity ever talk about his kids? Last one. This is from Rick in San Francisco. Subject line, just wondering. Rick writes, it looks as if the coastlines now open for drilling are the states that Obama did not carry in 08. I notice that California and New England, staunch Democratic, are not included. This is fine by me, of course. The South, the Gulf, and Alaska can have the environmental and social pollution that goes with offshore drilling. Rick in San Francisco. Hadn't thought of it that way, but you may be right. Matt is in Dallas, listening on Sirius. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, it's good to listen to, hear you sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I wonder why you're bashing the Catholics so much tonight.
Well, if I don't bash them just tonight, I bash them every chance I get. In the first place,
I realize that.
Okay. In the first place, I hate religion, but more importantly, it's not about me. It's about the crimes committed for centuries by the church, not just pedophilia, but the murder and mayhem, the Inquisition, the refusal to acknowledge science. The institutional church is a cesspool of crime, corruption, murder, all sorts of evil criminal activity. Now, individual nuns and some Catholic priests and some Catholic lay people have done great works of good and decent with good and decent results, but you don't have to be a Catholic to do good things. So I hate religion. I hate its institutional force. And the fact that Catholic priests and the bishops and the cardinals and the popes have gotten away literally with murder, mayhem, molestation, rape, death, all of this stuff for centuries turns my stomach. That's not a religious institution. That is a criminal enterprise, one that should be driven off the face of the earth.
Do you think the majority of...
Did you hear anything that I just said?
Oh, I sure did.
Okay.
I'm trying to answer the part of it. Is if you dissect the institution side from the people that are doing day-to-day, do you think the institution itself still pushes those same kinds of things it did historically? Or was it truly trying to...
Well, I don't understand your question. Why would anyone follow or be a party to an institution that is so corrupt and filthy and criminal as the Catholic Church? Why? You tell me. Answer your own question. You sound like a smart man. Are you a Catholic?
Yes, I am.
Why do you continue to associate yourself with an organization that is murderous, violent, vicious, rapes children, steals money, tortures the poor by telling them that being poor and ignorant is their lot? Just go screw, have lots of babies, and you'll get your reward in heaven. Why do you associate with an organization that corrupt?
Because I see it on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, look, you don't have an answer for me, and I understand, no offense, Matt, but most religionists that I talk to are so brainwashed, their brains, their power to reason has been so removed and replaced with dogma, fiction, superstition, lies, corruption, as to render any kind of a meaningful conversation utterly and absolutely impossible. I'm not trying to get all condescending to you. You are where you are. I am where I am. And, I mean, go ahead and continue your belief. Not trying to be condescending or patronizing, not at all. Do what you have to do, as I will. But the Catholic Church is a filthy, corrupt institution, that continues to poison humankind. It has always poisoned humankind. It will continue to poison humankind, because I can't see any way to eradicate it. It is just vile. I mean, you don't find anything like this in Islam, in Judaism, pick a religion. You don't find this madness. You don't even find it in other branches of Christianity until you get to the fundamentalist Protestants. But the Catholic Church is by any measure, if one is going to be honest and measure it by its hypocrisy and its criminal activity over the course of centuries, millennia, you can only come to one conclusion. And that is that it is a vile, global criminal enterprise whose organizing principle now seems to be pedophilia. So, you know, like I say, do what you need to do, pal. I don't respect your belief, nor do I criticize it. That's your business. If you want to give your what you consider to be your immortal soul over to people who couldn't care less whether you live or die in your own vomit, that's not what the church is about. That's not what the Catholic Church is about. They couldn't care less. And let me ask you something. Not this is not fair because you're not on the phone anymore, but maybe you can tell me. Maybe any Catholic can tell me why Adolf Hitler was never excommunicated from the church. He was a Catholic. Why has no pope, especially, was it Pius XII, who was a Nazi enabler? Man. Why was Hitler never excommunicated? A mass murderer. And I know the answer, because Hitler was involved in the work that the church had started centuries before, the annihilation of the Jews. There's no doubt, there's no question about that. It wasn't until Vatican II in 1962, whenever it was, that the church deigned to remove guilt from the Jews where it concerned the execution of the Christian God on earth. I mean, think about it. Adolf Hitler, never excommunicated. So I, you know, if you want to, you know, be a Catholic, but I just wonder if you're choosing that or if it, it was chosen for you. And I have a strong feeling it was chosen for you. Give me a child till he's five, I'll give you a Catholic for life. Who said that? We have to break here. So we'll take this break and come back and come back to your phone calls. All right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Dr. B writes, it was St. Augustine who said, give me a child till he's eight and I'll give you a Catholic for life. Okay, all the way to eight. And Francis writes, Joseph Goebbels was excommunicated. It's funny, Goebbels was excommunicated for the crime of marrying a Protestant. That's why he was... Got to live religious priorities, Francis. I didn't know that. He was excommunicated for the crime of marrying a Protestant. The murder of 8 million Jews. No big deal, huh? Jesus, God. That's the church, right?
All they have to do is go to our website and scroll down
and Michael
on YouTube.
Okay, there's something. Our YouTube guy is Hernan in Argentina. Or Argentina, and that's where he lives. That's where he works. That's where he's a citizen. And he put together a Malloy gallery, all sorts of YouTube videos, hundreds. Huh? Open your mic.
Hernan assembled a gallery of YouTube videos. Some of them are from your appearances on television. Most of them are just a still image of your face with a lot of your audio rants in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you're broadcasting live on Malloy Vision, he's creating YouTube videos from the Malloy Vision webcasts.
And what's he? And wait, people want to see you. There you go.
Oh God,
okay,
go
ahead, talk.
this isn't my show. Anyway, so if you just go to MikeMalloy.com, and scroll down halfway through the page, they're there.
Right.
Or you can, you know, do a search on YouTube for Mike Malloy Gallery. But it's all right
and
there.
And why would somebody want to do that?
For the same reason they want to watch you live. They want to see your little snippets of your videos.
Okay.
These are some, like, highlights that Hernan is putting out there, little quick ones.
Okay.
You know, short, 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. And they're just... dozens of them, hundreds
yeah,
of them.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there's two recent ones from our recent Malloy Vision casts. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I wasn't sure the all the emails were about here regarding Hernan. And again, thanks to Hernan, who lives in Buenos Aires, I believe, and he's been listening to the program for years and put all this stuff together. Stephen is in Burbank. Hey, Stephen.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I'm sorry, I got distracted by what you were talking about. It came to mind that, like, if somebody like me or anybody else like me is crazy enough to talk, it's like you can hold up the signs showing, like, screwball, eight ball, you know, nutcase, things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's about Naomi Wolf, and she will be in for a rude awakening when she starts playing footsies with these teabaggers. Because no matter how much you try to reason, no matter how much you try to use common sense and lay the line down step by step about how things are operating, mm-hmm. they will fail to get it. I used to like to rant and rave and say, well, you know what? They are not going to understand it until it happens to them personally.
Right,
and
right.
then we see that it is happening to them personally, and they still don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she's going to have to contend with. It's going to be an epiphany. She's going to go through surreal experiences. It's going to be unreal.
Well, you know, that's the part, I guess, that I can't get my mind around. And not that Naomi Wolf walks on water, but... you know, here's a nice Jewish girl who was brought up on the West Coast, who is very well educated, who, because of her cultural understanding, understands fascism, understands, Nazism, understands the implications of a right-wing organization like the Baggers, who, and the religious fundamentalists and the Protestant fundamentalists and the Teabaggers are linked as surely as conjoined twins. And Naomi Wolf knows this. Why is she walking into this trap of let's all sing kumbaya and try to understand these bastards? I don't get that.
Maybe she's doing it the same reason I do it, because I talk to them and I communicate with them, and I know I'm not going to get anywhere, but the feedback I get causes me to think about others, how to counter it, which I know won't work, but it's just more maybe. There will be something in there hidden somewhere that will snap them out of the trance. And so, you know, I can't quit, you know, you keep trying. I don't expect anything to happen, but you just can't quit.
Well, that, you know, that's where, and I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but that's where people like you and Naomi Wolf are, you know, obviously more evolved than I am, because when I get around these people, well, first of all, I take great effort not to get around them. But if I do happen to find myself in proximity to these baggers, all I want to do is get myself away. I don't want to say anything, because what I'm afraid of is just one word from one of these. Like, you know, come over and take my Evolve fish off my pickup truck or my Obama sticker. And I know this sounds awful, but I would just be inclined here in the North Georgia mountains to reach for the gun. You know, I don't like these people. I can't, and I appreciate the fact that you can do it, or Naomi Wolf can do it. But I'll tell you, Stephen, I can't. Hey, I got to leave there, man. Thanks, okay?
Yeah.
All right, sir. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Twenty-five before the hour, and it is time once again for a report card from Kate Petrini, who is our educational correspondent, school teacher in San Francisco. She sent this in at the end of last week, so it's her reference to U.S. History Week. Well, hey, Mike, it's U.S. History this week. Oh, I see what she wrote. Never mind. Strike all that. Jesus, let's start over again. Play the music again. Kate Petrini, our educational correspondent, school teacher in San Francisco. Her latest report card. Hey, Mike. In U.S. history this week, we are covering my favorite topic, FDR and the New Deal. Got to give my dad full credit here. He was an historian who shared his love of FDR with me from the time I was a child. History was something that bonded us until he passed away last February. It still does. Every time I look around my classroom, which is filled with books and DVDs that were gifts from my dad, I feel connected to him. Anyway, as we were watching clips from the documentary FDR, Years of Crisis, in class the other day, the parallels between the tactics used by right-wing extremists in the wake of the passage of FDR's Social Security Act and the tactics being used by today's right-wingers now that Obamacare has become law are clear. Here's an excerpt from the program's script. Narrator. As the 1936 campaign got underway, Roosevelt's opponents were hard-pressed to find issues with popular appeal. Gross farm income had increased to 50%. Production was rising. Unemployment was high, but below the emergency level. So as a last resort, they accused him of being a communist. Roosevelt. And in this campaign, another herring turns up. In former years, it has been British or French and a variety of other things, but this year it's Russian. Desperate in mood, angry at failure, cunning in purpose, individuals and groups are seeking to make communism an issue in an election where communism is not a controversy between the two major parties. Here and now, once and for all, let us bury that red herring and destroy that false issue. Narrator. FDR welcomed the chance to put his record on the line with the nation's voters. A tireless campaigner, he attracted huge crowds as he made his way across the United States. Roosevelt's Republican opponent in the 1936 presidential race was Alfred Landon, the governor of Kansas. Encouraged by a growing anti-Roosevelt press, Landon campaigned against regimentation and the expensive New Deal. Landon. Money intended for the relief of human suffering is being diverted to the building up of a shameless political machine. As chief executive, I intend to see that relief is purged of politics. There is ample money in this country to take care of those in need. When I am president, they will be taken care of. Roosevelt. Let me warn you, and let me warn the nation, against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things. We believe in Social Security. We believe in work for the unemployed. We believe in saving homes. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things. But we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We'll do all of them. We'll do more of them. We'll do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything. Narrator. Election Day, 1936, the climax of a bitter campaign. The Republicans were hopeful that their candidate could not match FDR's record or his popularity. The result? Franklin Roosevelt, 533 electoral votes. Alf Landon, 8. At his second inaugural, Roosevelt talked about all the things his New Deal policies had yet to accomplish. End of script. Kay writes, at least the right-wingers attacking Roosevelt knew the difference between a fascist and a communist, which is more than we can say about today's crop of ignorant hate-mongers. So as Beck, Limbaugh, Bachman, and the rest take a page from the right-wing demagogues in 1936, we can only hope that they will meet the same fate as the Republicans did in that election, being beaten into oblivion for the next 40 years, and hopefully much, much longer. K. Oh, P.S. Although FDR had to deal with being called a communist and a traitor to his class, he did not have to deal with the hideous racism to which President Obama is being subjected. I didn't think it was possible to be more ashamed of the actions of my country than I was at the time of the invasion of Iraq. But between the Republican leadership, the teabaggers, and the militia freaks being out in force and spewing their thinly veiled hatred, this country has truly reached a new low. K. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you. Kate Petrini is our educational affairs correspondent. She is a school teacher in San Francisco. Back to your phone calls. Brian is in Manchester, New Hampshire, listening online. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I agree with you completely about the hypocrisy, the evil, demonic hypocrisy of the Catholic Church and this former member of the Hitler Youth Pope there. I think he was a very much a willing recruit to the Hitler Youth, too, this Ratzinger. And I've been complaining about this guy going back to 2004, the way he was shifting off these criminals, these devils, these child molesters to third world parishes, as were American bishops and archbishops, and at the same time telling American Catholics and American from not just the Democratic Party, anybody that wanted to vote for John Kerry, that was tantamount to being excommunicated from the Catholic Church because John Kerry was pro-choice for American women,
right,
their citizens' right to privacy, for God's sake. But it's disgusting. But on one hand, you know, when you look at the long, long history over millennia, really, you could almost call it, of Irish slavery, basically, over many hundreds of years under the English, where in that time, at certain times in history, like the Christianity became a saving, a bit of, you know, a light of candle of lightness in the darkness of slavery, like Christianity was for Black American slaves in this country, that dark history of our country. For Irish people, too, the Catholic faith became something they had to do it in secret often, or they'd be lynched in the worst times of the English occupation of Ireland. And that part of it, too. But at the same time, that does not excuse the evil that continues to go on today. It's disgusting. I had one other point about I just finished reading a couple of books about Poland in World War II. One of them's called No Greater Ally by Kenneth Koskoden, and it talked, you know, Polish pilots in the Battle of Britain, they fought alongside Polish II Corps, fought alongside my beloved father in World War II Italy, many battles there. The troops that finally took Monte Cassino there were the Polish II Corps, the very brave lads there. And also in World War II, you know, the Poles were, unlike the French and the Italian Catholics under a German occupation, they were not considered undermensch the way the Polish, the Slavic people of Poland were.
Right.
They were enemies of the Nazi state, too. They had begun killing off Poles, too, in their death camps towards the end of World War II. But the Poles went out of the way, many Poles, individual Polish peasant people there, to hide and save Jewish people, Jewish children from the death camps. And even though they knew it was a death sentence for them, Polish nuns particularly, they were suffered horrible.
Well, you know that because of it.
But that does not, I agree, it does not clean the Pope's hands in World War II.
Right. Let's mention also, because I know people are listening who want this mentioned, while there were members of the Polish Catholic Church, notably nuns and in few instances priests, who did protect and shelter Jews,
yeah,
the Polish people themselves in so many instances were more than willing and cheerful to turn the Jews over to the invading Nazis.
Too much of the majority of the population was, because under such a force as Hitler's and the Nazis invading your land there, where you're much less, they were the superpower of Europe and maybe of the world at that time, Nazi Germany, and
right,
that became Nazi Europe. Maybe it was to save their own skins, but at the same time, I know the history of Polish anti-Semitism. What was it, in 46 and 47, they even killed a couple of hundred Jews who tried to come back to Poland to regain their homes and
right,
possessions.
Right.
That kind of evil can't be. That is almost, when you talk about something like child molestation, I'm like you, that almost is dwarfed even the death camps. They don't, you know, just, but it is the same type of thing, attacking the weak and the defenseless.
Yeah, yeah.
When you
I
think
you
of it, and just that they're
right. And you know, the thing, and Brian, thank you. I really do hear the passion in your voice there. So does everybody else, but, and it's genuine, obviously it's genuine. You know, individual acts by people, whether they're Jew, Catholic, Protestant, whatever, are individual acts, as far as I'm concerned, acts of heroism that don't require the underpinnings of some religious dogma to do those acts. They come from a humanistic point. You think? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
I am a patriot.
It is 10 before the hour. Dave in Montevideo, Minnesota writes, Mike, last night during supper, my family was discussing the teabaggers. My 16-year-old son suggested that we should round them up, guns and all, and dump them in Antarctica. He said they would never be able to leave because they mostly reject science and would not know how to build a boat. I asked him how they would survive in that climate, and he replied, that would not be our problem. Seemed like a pretty good idea until I realized the baggers would slaughter all the penguins. Back to the drawing board, Dave. Yeah. Speaking of 16-year-olds, don't forget, Friday, day after, or the evening after tomorrow, Friday night, we will be attempting, I don't know if it'll still work anymore, we used to do this a lot, Youth Night, where we want phone calls only from people between the ages, inclusive, 13 and 17. So if you are 13, 14, 15, 16, or 17, and you want to call in Friday night and voice your opinion, you're not going to get a bunch of challenge from me at all. That's not the point. The point of having kids call in has always been in the past, and it still applies. It's just to hear your take. I may ask you some questions, but it's to hear your take on what's going on, because after all, you know, I don't know how many adults admit this, but it's your world. It's not ours anymore, you know. Especially people of my generation, we screwed it up so badly. And then the generation behind us didn't seem to give a damn how badly it was screwed up. Now it's yours, and it's a mess. So, sorry about that, and I wish I would have worked harder. I know my parents and people in their generation, and my grandparents, people in their generation, they did work hard. A lot of them were racist. A lot of them were not the kind of people that believed in equality for everybody. But they did work hard to build something, at least for their families, at least for the future, or they thought they were. And but my parents' generation kind of dropped the ball. My generation not only dropped it, but we punted it completely out of the stadium. The generation, the one you're in, what is it? You're not a boomer. What are you?
I think I'm Gen X.
Yeah, you're Gen X.
I'm pretty sure I'm Gen X.
Yeah, I think you are. The Gen X generation. Now I have a son who's in the millennial generation, and it's his, and the one that's behind him. The kids that are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 right now. I don't know. I just want to hear what you say, what you think. So, and so does the audience. So if you want to call in Friday night and participate in this, we certainly would welcome your phone call. Todd is in Edgar Springs, Missouri. Welcome to the program, Todd.
Hey, thank you, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm fine.
Oh, that's great. Mike, I'm called, and I had to apologize to my cell phone. I hope I'll connect the phone up. I've called to ask you, and I'm not trying to be contentious here, but I've heard you say a lot of things about Rush Limbaugh and Beck and all of them and how they're hate mongers and stuff like that. Could you be more specific? I haven't heard anything specifically from them that they built.
No, I can't be more specific. They wallow in hate. They don't have blood. They have hate coursing through their veins. They incite others to hate. They're sneaky bastards, frankly. While they don't come out and say, I hate this group or I hate that group, they use the kind of code words that people who are on the verge of a nervous breakdown understand. And Limbaugh and Beck and the rest of these swine are the type that would kick them over the edge into their hate and let them express their hate, and they do it just for fun. Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these people who are multi-millionaires, they engage in this blood sport of let's you and him fight. They're cowardly bastards. They would never step down into the ring and duke it out with somebody on their own. They just want everybody else to fight. So yeah, if you want an example of their hatred, listen. I mean, you know, if you can hear it, maybe you can't hear it. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe the caller didn't hear Beck before he went on his forced vacation say that Barack Obama has a deep-seated hatred of white people. and that was.
Well, remember when he said he wanted to kill Michael Moore?
He wanted to strangle Michael.
Yeah, he wanted to strangle. Yeah, with his bare hands.
So I don't know where this caller was listening.
You know, of all the things that I've said about these pigs, you know, I don't think I've ever said that I want to personally murder them. I've said I hope that they commit suicide. I think they're scum. I think they're filth. But, you know, when I get a call, you know, like you say, when you get a caller like this guy who says he doesn't hear the hate, what the hell do you call it when he wants Nancy Pelosi to drink wine that somebody's put poison in? What do you call it when he pretends to pour inflammable liquid over somebody? Who is that guy supposed to be?
That was supposed to be the average American citizen, and he said this is what Obama is doing to the average American citizen. And all of these right-wingers jumped on the death camp, the birther camp, the whole Obama wants to kill your grandparents, he must be stopped, we have to have an armed revolution.
Right, so when you call...
Slit our wrists for, you know...
Oh, that was Michelle Bachmann.
The point is, it's a round robin.
Right.
They all reinforce each other, and the right-wing hosts are saying it, and then the right-wing politicians...
Well, when I hear somebody like this caller who says he doesn't hear the hate, then to me there's no point in talking to him. I mean, he's just beyond. I mean, if you can't hear the hate when someone says I would like to strangle Michael Moore with my bare hands, what the hell does that mean? If that's not hate, what the hell is it?
Or Obama hates white people.
Yeah, Obama hates white people.
Obama has a deep-seated hatred of white people.
Or Obama is a communist. Or Obama's not born here. Yeah, you know. Nah, I'm sorry, Mr. Caller. I think you're a fool. I really do. I think you're a fool. And you're one of those types of people that can be so easily moved into the direction of a murderous, murderous style fascism. In fact, I think that last caller is, we're going to have to kill the camera for the next 2 days for maintenance, so we will not be doing any video streaming. April Fool. Aha! Gotcha, suckers! I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.